welcome to Neighborhood Church. To learn more about who we are as a community or to financially support Neighborhood, go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Enjoy the message.
All right. Well, we are going to start. Thank you, Coldplay, for your inspiring music. All right. So we are continuing our series called God With Us, So Now What? Which comes out of this idea of if the idea of Emmanuel that we see in Isaiah around what we celebrate during Advent, if there's really God with us, like, what are we supposed to do with that? Like, what great news if it doesn't actually apply to our life? And as we've been talking, what Rebecca highlighted for the month of January, we've been talking about rituals, symbols, icons, relics, and those words we could change, like, infinitely, right? We all have different words of intentions, rhythms, goals, mindsets, energy, habits, right? These are things that we participate in because we have some sort of hope or belief that's going to bring some sort of transformation, right? So we participate in external things. Ooh, that's on this right here. We participate in external things hoping it does something inside of us, right? So it could be the cup of coffee that you have every morning. Right? Who does the ritual of coffee every day? Right? You don't really even think about it. Or, I mean, I do, because when I wake up, I'm like, I get to have coffee. It feels great, right? And as I'm making it, I am anticipating this is going to make me feel good. Not just make me feel caffeinated, it's going to make me feel good. It's part of the whole ritual of me grabbing the big thing of beans I got from my buddy Eric, and so I think about him. We have the same grinder for like the last 15 years that every time it works, I'm surprised it works. Then I think about, like, oh man, my wife and I have been together for so long. I have a couple of mugs that I use that bring me some joy. All right, so without even consciously thinking about it, I'm putting myself in a place of where I'm connecting with some history of myself. I'm being reminded of the beautiful things, and I'm in anticipation of what's to come. This is what rituals can do. We do rituals without thinking about it, like the, I should stay positive. That wonderful birthday song that we sing, right? No one likes the song unless you're like 7, right? The rest of us do it because we don't want to be the only person who doesn't sing, right? And even the candles, why do we, does anyone know, and I don't, does anyone know the real history of why we have candles? I imagine it's something like we used to burn it so that the demons wouldn't like eat our souls. I imagine that's how most of them, I'm convinced it's people who thought germs were a myth. And so they said, let's spit on food and get everyone to eat it. And they're like, that's a great idea, right? As a germaphobe, I am very acutely aware of how you're blowing those candles out. And once I was not planning to tell this, I had one kid that knew that and then blew out one candle by closing one nose. Hand of God. And if you know my kids, I'll let you know which one you thought it was. So getting off that, I love my children. Why am I talking? Oh, birthday songs, right? But we do it without even thinking about it. Like, have birth, and you're, even if you're at a restaurant, you're like, oh, what a great way to ruin my night, all right, we're going to sing this song, but we still sing it, because there's, when people are singing a song for you, even if you're like, don't sing it to me, at least me, I'm like, oh, there's people who love me, or people at least tolerate me, and believe that they want to sing this song, whatever, even those can bring you to a place of where you were when you're a kid when you sang that song. It's going to make you think of other people. Like, rituals can be a place, if we're willing to step into them, if we're willing to, like, surrender to it, it can bring some internal transformation. And the rituals that we have are should be very, very different. For me, I entered this ritual that made me feel good. It made me feel connected to other people. It made some things in my life really, really easy to do. And that ritual was great until it wasn't great. And all of a sudden, that ritual, through some trauma, turned into slightly killing me. It was hurting me. It was toxic. And for a long time, I just kept thinking, well, it's not that bad. Have you been there before? You're like, it's not that bad. This is not that bad. It can't really be so bad. And maybe I'll take a break, or maybe I'll quit someday, but not today. And so I kept participating in that ritual. And then once I experienced that trauma, I knew that I needed to pivot out of this habit, this ritual, and I had an excuse for every reason why I couldn't. But there was one thing that another ritual that helped, like, me escape, and it was running. Oh, I loved running. Loved to move. I loved to exercise. And how do I be honest about this? I love running when I'm running, right? I hate running until I'm actually get my running shoes on, and I look really good in my running shorts too, let me tell you. So, hey, a little tip to runners, all right? If you want to look fast, wear short shorts. Shorter the shorts, the faster you look. Trust me, you two, we have some runners. It's true. Just you're gonna, if you wear longer shorts, you're like, I'm slow. Yes, it's true. I know. All right. Why am I telling you? Oh, but the habit or the ritual of running for an hour, I could turn my brain off. And from the anxiety, from the stress of work, from family, and also this ritual that I was participating in, I could like forget about it for about an hour. And I was meeting my body with kindness, and I felt like I'm accomplishing something. I'd feel my heart, and I just felt so alive. And then I'd get done running, and I'd turn, and I'd go for a drink, and I'd be like, what am I doing? This ritual of drinking is killing me. And it was really difficult for me to stop. And I bring this up, that when I stopped, sometime in June, I finally got the courage just to say, I know that this ritual is killing me. And it's hurting the people I love. It's hurting a lot of things, right? Mainly it's hurting me. And so when I finally put words to it, I woke up and looked at my partner and said, I'm an alcoholic. I can't do this anymore. I need to change. You know what one of the first things I thought of? I'm like, I'm going to have so much energy to go running. And I'm going to run all the time. And I told most everyone, I'm like, I'm going to run a marathon again, which I swore I'd never do. Because you have to be insane to run marathons more than once. Once you know what it does to your body, to willingly, like, you know what, I'm going to do that again. It's like someone should just slap me anytime I say it. So, but in my mind, I'm like, if I'm not investing in this ritual, and this ritual of running helped me escape the toxicity of my other ritual, I'm just going to do more of this ritual. Do you know how many times I've run in the last 7 months? Maybe 5. And I would do it probably 3 to 4 times easily a week when I was drinking. And it took me a while. It actually took this series for me to like reflect on my rituals. I'm like, why did I stop? Why is running so difficult for me? And it finally came to me. Because when I was participating in that ritual of running as an escape from the ritual of destroying myself, numbing myself, and now that I stopped that ritual of numbing myself, I realized I didn't have to run away from myself anymore. I didn't need that ritual to have this escape where I felt like I could breathe, where I could just like forget about stuff. Now I'm like, I think I need to come in contact with why I was trying to numb myself, why was that ritual so important to me? Why did I give it so much power? And imagine this, I cried a lot, right? I cried a lot. But I also discovered a lot, learned a lot about myself. And this last couple of weeks, I've run a couple times, and it made me feel so alive. I realized running, this ritual, it's time for it to evolve and pivot into something else. Of what other ways can it add value, not just to me physically, but to me emotionally? Because when we have rituals that we participate externally, it can bring to internal transformation. And that transformation from where we think that ritual is going to deliver us or bring us or make us feel or ground us, over time, it might evolve into something else. And what a beautiful thing. I mean, take the symbol of your wedding ring. I'm not even wearing it. Nikki, I love you so much, right? I'm about to give an example. I'm not even wearing it. Oh, brother. So funny. I keep my hand in my pocket. You know, the wedding ring that I always wear. All right, that wedding ring from when we first got married and what it meant to me, it was so exciting to finally be married, right? And I got to show the world this external thing that meant something internally, right? And now that we've been married for 22 years, clearly that wedding ring means something different, right? that I do wear my wedding ring a lot. But I was working in the car, and I've heard horror stories of people like, yeah, I was wearing my wedding ring. My finger was gone. I'm like, I'm never touching a car with a ring on ever again. But now it means something even more. It evolved of thinking of not just the last 22 years, but I've known Nikki since I was 13, and I'm still surprised that she's still willingly, like, comes home at the end of the day to me, right? So these rituals and symbols are meant to progress if we're willing to be engaged with them, if we're willing to be consciously awake to what transformation, positive or negative, are the rituals or symbols or icons or relics or habits or energy, whatever word you want to call it, is it actually working for us? Well, lucky for us, we have dozens of examples through what we call the Hebrew Bible or the Old Testament, New Testament as well. It has all these rituals. It has rituals of if you were grieving that you put on something called sackcloth, right? Not real hip with it and wow. And you would shave your head and you'd put on ashes, you dump them all over yourself. And you might think, why would you do that? Well, this is a ritual that you would do publicly, externally, so that you wouldn't have Bill from accounting coming up to you and be like, hey, Chris, how the kids doing? You doing okay? You're like, Bill, you can clearly see I have ash on my head and I'm wearing sackcloth. I am not okay. Oh, Sodder, you're right. Right? It was meant to communicate something to those around you of what you were feeling inside. So not just so you could avoid Bill from accounting, but maybe people might meet you with kindness. If you knew someone was hurting, grieving, you might show up a little bit differently. Right? So it was a ritual to communicate. The Sabbath was another ritual where you'd have to take a whole day and night of where you don't engage with work. And they had crystal clear rules of what is work and what is not work. And it sounds really legalistic. It sounds like, why do you have so many rules? But it's almost as if they knew that humans have a tendency to always want to do more. That when we get bored, which just means we stop, we slow down. If you're like me, my brain says, hey, if you're going to sit, you might as well sit and do more work because the more you work, the better you are. Said no one. But we all sing the same song and it never works. So imagine being in a culture where they said, hey, we know you're going to want to go like produce because you think if you're busy, you're important. We're going to teach you and force you that you have to do nothing so that you have to reconnect with the people that are right in front of you. And that might be a positive thing, right? So rituals can start at one place, bring transformation if we enter into it. But over time, you read through the Bible, some of those rituals that they did changed. And not just changed the ritual, it changed the people. And we are going to read a story of in the Bible, in Deuteronomy, that is one of quite possibly the oddest, most disturbing. Like exact opposite of how we want to be as humans. We're going to read a story because it's in the Bible. And if you know me, I happen to love the Bible. Big fan. I've given my professional career to this book. And I love reading odd, disturbing, violent things in the Bible because you have to, it forces you to think, wait, so we worship this God? Right? And for me, these are very important questions because the Bible is not an owner's manual. The Bible is not an acronym for basic instructions before leaving Earth, right? Burlap to Cashmere got it wrong. That's who sang that song, if you know it, right? Kristen, you know it. Do you know that song? I know you knew that song. That was for you. It's not like if you have an owner manual and your air conditioner is not working, you can pull out the owner's manual, all right? The person I bought my house from had an owner manual for everything, and he died. Bad news. The good news is that I got all the owner manuals of everything in my house, right? Every drawer would open up, I'm like, oh, owner manual for a saw that I don't own. So, but you'd pull it out and you could troubleshoot of like, it's not cooling as fast as I want. Try these things. Sometimes we treat the Bible as like, oh, just plug and play. Open up, read Psalm 23, I feel better. And there's a lot of people who, the way they engage the Bible is, Bible says it, I believe it, which is fine. Until you read this passage. Then you might say, Bible said it, I don't think we're supposed to believe that, right? And I'm doing this on purpose because the Bible is messy. It's what I love most about the Bible, is that they wrote the Bible They put all these stories that they shared orally, had written down, had in different places, and they put all together because they're trying to tell future selves, generations ahead of them, we're going to be honest about our stories so that you can live better stories. Stories of owning people, maybe we need to evolve. We're going to leave it in there so that in the future, we don't own people. Right? So I'm telling you on the front end, this is in the Bible. It is disturbing. It's problematic. I'm going to walk us through it. And at the end, you're going to have this epiphany. Because I told you to have an epiphany. That's why. All right? So here we go. This is Deuteronomy. Oh, this is so good. I'm not going to give you the context of it until after. Mainly for shock value. All right. When you go to war against your enemies, and the Lord your God delivers them into your hands, and you take captives, if you notice among the captives a beautiful woman and are attracted to her, you may take her as your wife. Bring her into your home and have her shave her head, trim her nails, and put aside the clothes she was wearing when captured. And after she has lived in your house and mourned her father and mother for a full month, then you may go to her and be her husband, and she shall be your wife. If you're not pleased with her, let her go wherever she wishes. You must not sell her or treat her as a slave, since you have dishonored her. I told you, very odd, very disturbing, on purpose. And here's why, right? In this time, this Hebrew people lived in a civilization, in a whole region of other civilizations that were trying to survive. And how do you survive as an ancient civilization? You will try reproducing, maybe have more livestock, maybe have more places you can, like, farm in the desert. This is tricky, right? So the way that you could also grow is, like, in kindergarten, you go and just take someone else's muffin because you're like, no, I want more muffin, so I'm going to take your muffin. This is the same thing. Tribes and civilizations would say, well, we want to expand and grow, so what do? We go take their stuff. And whatever with we win in war, and they use the word God. If God told you to go to battle and you win, here's how you celebrate. And you celebrate by taking something or people that you feel should be good to you or attractive. And so you take them because in this time, people were just property. Well, anyone who was not a man was just property. That's just how it worked. And you have to remember, ancient civilization, this is how they thought. They also thought this is what gods or God would want them to do. So what we're seeing is people in this time in Deuteronomy, a little bit in Exodus, in Leviticus, they have all these rules and laws that are really weird. There's a lot of blood, a lot of like fat burning, and a lot of different things. And why do they have stuff like this, instructions on what to do? Right before this verse is a whole section on what if someone in your community is murdered, but we don't know who did it. They give you detailed instructions of how to move through it. They give you instructions. What if you want to buy someone's bowl, but then someone else's bowl kills the bowl that you want to buy? Gives you instructions of how to work through it. What if you and your brother got into an argument? How are you supposed to resolve that? Gives you detailed instructions of how to walk through it. Now, those instructions are archaic, barbaric, most of them kind of evil, and really odd. And why? And I love talking about this. If you've ever been in a toxic relationship, if you've ever been in a toxic situation, and you're coming out of it, maybe you are part of a ritual that you didn't ask for, right? Maybe it's a ritual that you signed up for, or you willingly went along with it, and you need to get out of it. When you get out of those situations, like a bad relationship or a bad friendship or a bad workplace, sometimes you just need to get away. You're not calculating what's going to happen. You're like, I just need to end it and move to something else. Sometimes you need friends around you to remind you who you are on purpose. They might need to tell, if you ever worked with someone who's grieving and you ask them, hey, what do you want for lunch? They're like, I don't know what I want in reality, let alone trying to articulate, do I want Perkins French silk pie? Or do I want someone to drive up the shore to like Betty's Pies and get me some cream pie? You don't have that capacity. When I work with grieving people or families, it's usually, hey, I'll stop by at 3 p.m. and I'm going to bring you something to eat. Good friends will say, hey, Chris, it's 6 p.m. Have you showered in the last 5 days? Oh, I forgot that's what humans do, right? When you're coming out of a toxic relationship, sometimes you need order. And this, my friends, is the Bible. The Hebrew people are coming out of being enslaved by the Egyptians for generations and generations. And now they're in this new place with this new guy named Moses. And God, they're in front of this mountain, Mount Sinai. And here God gives them 10 commandments. Why? Because sometimes you need people to tell you how to live. And this is step one of an evolution into something else. This odd story we read for the time is radically progressive, which is embarrassing to the word progressive, right? Because everything we just read is evil, sinful. We don't do that. We don't own humans. We don't take advantage of humans. But it's like a little blip of being progressive, because progressive simply means, like, I'm a progressive Christian, which means I am open to progress. I'm open to new ways of thinking, of believing, of worshiping. I'm not intimidated by discovering new things. And here, God, or these people believe God told them, here's how it used to be, and now it's like this. And what is it like this? First off, men saw women or people as property. In war, they took this woman. But then it says that you are to take her as your wife, which is insulting still, right? But let's go back into this ancient civilization. We can't treat it like now. We're doing a disservice to the Bible when we take modern ways of thinking and implant them into an ancient civilization, right? And they, I'm not going to get into that. At that time, this was what people did. And now there's a story saying, you shall take her as your wife. This is progressive, amazingly. Why? Because if you're taking someone as your wife in the spoils of war, now that person has at least a little bit of legal standing. That person has a little bit of way of grounding as they move out in the community and saying, well, who are you? And they're like, I am blah, blah, blah. Right? Blah, blah. Right? Which still, let's be honest, this is not a great thing. This is still a person being owned by someone else. But it is a blip. It is a movement in this progress of what I believe God is inviting us to be humans. So if they have legal standing a little bit, they have some sort of currency, which in that time was your last name. It was who you belonged to. And then also it says you have to, like, shave her head, trim her nails, give her new clothes for 30 days. Why? Because you just took her from her family, from her faith, from her story, from her friends, from her dreams, from her grief. You've taken that from, you've robbed that from her. She did not sign up for this. So in this horrible story, we see this invitation of saying, treat them as a human who is grieving, which is a little bit better than treating them just as property. Right? I'm still not saying it's okay, but can you see how there's just slight, in this ritual, there is this new way of being human. And then it says, and this is one of the most important ones, when you be with her as her husband, which you can imagine what that might be, and the whole situation, it's not what you signed up for. It's definitely not what she signed up for. But the power goes to the man. It says that you have to bring her wherever she requests. Now imagine being a warmonger man in that tribe, and it says this. You might be looking around at your buddies and be like, well, this is not what we've done. But they're saying, this is what God says we are to be. Because now, that woman you can't sell. That woman you just can't leave somewhere else. Your wife gets to dictate the terms of where she ends up. Why? Because that's at least what you owe her for what you stole her from. What does this all mean for us? It means this. Even in the messy, complicated, evil, disturbing parts of the Bible, not everyone, but a lot, there is this invitation to participate in a ritual, an external ritual that's going to bring internal transformation, which we see in the person of Jesus. And we see the kind of life that Jesus is inviting people to be, him declaring there's a new way of being human. There's a new way of doing life, which means we love even our enemies as we love ourselves. Is that who are we to love and extend kindness and believability and inclusion to? Everybody. Why? Because the image of God is in every single person. And if that's true, every interaction I have with whoever I am meeting God. And if you believe that to be true and you believe that to be sacred and you've oriented your life around that message, then everywhere you go, you are having high fives and handshakes with Jesus Christ. That changes how you treat and engage people. It changes how you show up in a room. It changes if you're going to engage in war or property or not. And that invitation of that kind of arc of humanity, we see little blips throughout this disturbing ancient writings, but still a promise or an invitation to be this kind of human. And this is the power of rituals. Started out like this. Started out me trying to escape from myself. Now the ritual has evolved and changed. What I needed it to be has led me somewhere else. I don't need to run away from myself. We don't need to treat people as if they're property. Like, what if that evolved? Clearly, it evolved into how do we continue to give people agency over themselves? How do we let people believe they can make the best decisions about their body themselves? How do we trust that parents make the best decisions for their kids with their doctors? What if we give, like, agency to people of how they want to express themselves? Even though it might be different than us. Why? Because we can trust that their rituals are bringing transformation. So I leave you with two things. First one is this. What options do you have? Meaning, what are the rituals that you participate in on a regular basis, maybe daily, weekly, monthly, annual, decade? What are the things that you do in your life that bring you joy? What are the things that you do in your life that rob you of joy? What are the things that you do that you just, they don't like make you feel great, they don't make you feel horrible. They just kind of like keep you moving, right? Can you name those things? Because these are important. And if you don't take time to evaluate, not just where you're at, are you clear of who you want to be? Because if we want these rituals and these symbols, these icons, these relics, these habits, these rhythms to move us somewhere with purpose and on purpose, we have to be clear of where we're at and where we want to be. Right? Like my professor said, if you aim for nothing, you hit it every single time. I know he didn't come up with that, but Dr. Shaka, I believe he did. Right? If you aim for nothing, you're going to hit it every time. And so can you name and come in contact with those rhythms and those images? And number two, I'm going to camp on this one for a couple minutes, and then we're going to wrap up, is if you can name and process what those rhythms are or those icons or symbols, like, do you have the tools and the resources to really evaluate if it's working or not? Because for me, I needed some more help. In my running, in my habit of drinking, or my rhythm of drinking, in my professional career, I need resources because the way I think can be very anxious. So my brain goes like 1,000 times, like over and over again. And if I say it out loud, Nikki's like, what is wrong with you? And I'm like, oh, thank you for that encouragement. But you're right, right? She's like, you need to slow down. Think you're doing all right. So having places where I can process, which can be a therapist, doctor, lawyer, accountant, a mentor, boss, parent, pastor, right? Shaman, like there's so many people who can help us. Maybe it's a community of friends. I can tell you who inspired me to help me process my rhythms and my rituals. It was you guys. It was Neighborhood Church. And like, I know a lot of your stories. I don't know everyone's story, but I know a lot of your stories because we've gone out and got drinks or coffee or tea or we've talked. And I had the honor of sitting in pain with some of you and joy and being able to, marry your kids, right? I got to do weddings. I didn't marry their kids. I officiated. I have to say that, right? That's very important. I officiated the wedding of your child. The honor to baptize them, right? And maybe in the future baptize other people's kids. Like, it is such an honor. But being in these places, like, I had someone recently ask me, who's a progressive Christian as well, and they said, Chris, why are you still doing church? Honestly, why are you, just heart to heart, why are you still doing church? Because you are probably aware, right, that progressive Christians, church is just not, for a lot of people, church is just not the hippest thing for them. It doesn't feel relevant to them. And so when they come at me and they say, why are you still pastoring church? Is it even relevant? Is it still alive? I'm like, if it is or isn't, I'm still showing up. Because this ritual has kept me alive. not just for a paycheck, right? That's important as well. Thank you, Carly. It's kept me alive to see you continue to show up. Because you know what keeps us inspired? Or how can you use me? You know what keeps me inspired? Is that you keep showing up. And the things that you're walking through, from pain to addiction to cancer to treatment to losing jobs to finding jobs to being stressed out about work, of marriage, is marriage working, is it not working, is all the things that you're walking through, and you still show up because there is power, not just in showing up in some place that has a cross. That's not a magic trick. What shows up is being able to look at each other and saying, who you are matters. And who you do, or who you... that also matters. That matters deeply. Oh, okay. What you do also matters. Wow, that robbed the energy of where I was going. But anyways, right? Of who you are and what you do matters. And Jesus had this way. I call Jesus the great reminder. Jesus had a way of showing up and reminding people that who they are has always been good. And sometimes, like the woman at the well, just needed someone to remind her. Right? The person with the disease, someone, Jesus just needed to remind them that you matter and what you do. Everyone else might be telling you that you don't have value or worth because of X, Y, and Z. I'm here to tell you, remind you that who you are matters. When we show up, it is a protest that who you are is garbage. When we show up, we are reminding each other the way we are on social media matters. When we show up, we're reminding whatever sacred love or divine ultimate reality, it matters. Because right now there is people saying some toxic stuff. There's people out there trying to change a narrative of what it means to be sacred or holy. They're trying to redefine what it means to have empathy or mercy. They're trying, beyond just politics, there is a narrative out there that, as a follower of Jesus, I believe is a protest. And that's showing up. And that's not just showing, you have to go to church, you have to go to church. No, you show up because you're saying, who I am matters and who you are matters. And I want to be an inspiration in a way you've been inspiring to me. So neighbor of church, thank you. Thank you for showing up. Not just at church. Big fan, you're showing up at church, right? Thank you for showing up at work. In your home, with your teenagers, with your kids' friends, and showing up for them, tolerating their average, their amazing music, right? The way you show up makes a difference in the lives of other people. So we have these weird, ancient, sacred rituals that evolve us into a place of maybe we, with purpose or on purpose, can be the humans that we really want to be. Sometimes we need each other, and sometimes we need rituals. So I'm going to pray, and I invite you to join me. So God, we thank you. I thank you for the messiness of this Bible and the awkwardness and the things that we get and the things we don't get. But we have real feelings when we read the Bible because we're real humans. And that we're humans with messiness, awkwardness, pain, joy, grief, similar in the Bible. And it can point us to a present reality and a future reality. And there is a good God who wants good things for us. So Holy Spirit, I ask that you would remind us and help us be in contact with what are the habits and rituals and symbols and icons and rhythms and the energy that we give ourselves to on a daily, weekless, quarterly basis. And give us the wisdom and the moxie to be honest of where we're at in relation to those rituals, to those people, to those rhythms. And I thank you for the collective work that we get to do together. And we get to show up on a Sunday to remind each other that we're good, that we're beautiful, that we're sacred, that who we are and what we do matters, so that we can continue to go out into the world to be those people on purpose and with purpose. So we love you, God. Be with us. Amen. All right. Well, thank you for being in this space with me today. I hope that you have a great rest of your weekend. And go Vikings and 2025. Thank you.